to the record button and see what happens. Well, hey, Brian.
Hey, Mickey.
I'm on your coast.
Are you on the West Coast? Where are you at?
I am in San Diego, and it is gorgeous here, and it is like 75 degrees, but no humidity. So I walk outside and I go, ah. And then I thought, hey, I'm near my best friend, Brian Randall. But unfortunately, I passed you in the air and I waved. Because you're not here, Brian.
That's right. I'm in Chicago. So I'm in your normal time zone, the central time zone. And I have to say, other than having to be inside because I'm working, when I do go outside, Chicago has been lovely the last couple of days.
Awesome. Are you having fun?
Yeah, I'm at VS Live. I did an all-day DevOps workshop on Monday. Did a couple of talks today, one on database DevOps and another one on Azure DevOps with Kubernetes. And so that was fun. What's really interesting is that the title of the talk was Azure DevOps with VSTS and Kubernetes. And so it's kind of funny. I was actually talking about doing DevOps on the Azure platform with VSTS. And so after last week's broadcast discussing the wonders that is the new name, it was kind of funny to be talking about it in those kind of terms.
So what's interesting is this week, we're both recording on the road. So we've got our portable equipment with us that we're recording with. So I'll be interested to see how this podcast turns out.
Well, we do have the magic of editing, and hopefully your dulcet tones will come through like they did last time.
We do not edit, Brian. Remember, this is live and unfiltered for our listeners.
Well, when I say edit, I didn't edit any of the content. I just cleaned up some of the heavy breathing.
Well, welcome everyone to episode 2 of DevOps FM, The Outage. And I suspect most people know what I'm talking about when I say that.
Well, most people, we're assuming our initial listeners are friends and family.
Yes, which they probably are.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. Well, you know, we've kind of had a stealth launch of our podcast, so we'll see if we're able to pick up some more listeners as we go along.
Yeah, well, you know, I have to say the whole getting things posted, the editing process, and the main thing, submitting it to iTunes and having that kind of pick up and through the various broadcast networks. I do know that a buddy of mine here at the show looked up on one of his podcast apps that's on it's a Windows Store app. I forget the name, but he found it right away. You could find it when you go to iOS and search, and it's being picked up by the third parties. We should have it on Google Play, and you can always just go to devops.fm and we'll have a link and you can listen on your computer. But for those of you who want on the mobile experience, we should all be out there by episode 2.
Oh, but what's awesome is it's now I can now say, and you can rate and review us on the iTunes store.
Oh, do we really want anyone to review it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So here we go, Brian. When I say the outage, what does that mean to you?
Well, it's a day that is going to live in the memory of lots of people who use Azure DevOps, aka VSTS and Azure, in that there is an outage on September 4th, 2018. And it was caused by lightning, it turns out, that brought down the South Central U.S. region. And Microsoft is giving us some preliminary root analysis from the Azure team, and the VSTS team has posted a very detailed breakdown. But at the end of the day, Mother Nature came up and smacked Azure upside the head, and Azure was down for a little bit, but Azure got back up, and she's doing fine, and so is VSTS.
So it's September. This happened on September 4th, which in Texas in September, it's still really freaking hot because it is the South. So there was a lightning strike that struck near one of the South Central U.S. data centers. And if you know anything about the South in the summer, there are constant thunderstorms that just pop out of nowhere and just are constantly happening, especially if you've ever had to fly through Atlanta in the summer. It's pretty darn bad. But essentially, the lightning strike took out the cooling systems, which therefore the data center started doing exactly what it was supposed to do in an automated fashion and said, oh, it's getting hot. Let's start powering everything down. So in reality, the data center started doing what they wanted, but unfortunately that led to VSTS, as it was called, still called at the time, to be unavailable as a result. And that was kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it was really painful. And there were two pieces to the problem. Number one is the fact that VSTS was going to be down. Unfortunately, the data center going down also affected other Azure services to the point that, unfortunately, we're seeing some flaws in some of the Azure services themselves, including Azure Active Directory, because people could not log in at all, even though they weren't trying to access a resource in the South Central data center. So naturally, you can assume if I had a website and I chose South Central and deployed it there, and I didn't have any redundancy set up, I could assume I wouldn't be able to use it. Okay, that's expected. On the other hand, people that were in other parts of the country and other parts of the world were being affected by this outage. And so what we're having here is some understanding of, one, what it's like to try and run a global service, and two, when you find flaws in your design that are really hard to test for. I mean, taking down an entire data center is not something that I think Microsoft has tried to do. And unfortunately, this is something that has affected other cloud providers. AWS has had a couple big ones. In fact, a couple years ago, they had one that took down Netflix for a while, and that was noticeable. Google Cloud has had downtime. It's the reality of the cloud that there's going to be downtime, but I think the big thing is we weren't expecting the global effect it had on people in VSTS. And so being able to read Buck Hodge's post, and Buck is the director of development for VSTS, aka Azure DevOps, and he goes into a lot of detail, and it's really refreshing to see the transparency that the team is willing to do to share with customers, competitors, and the world to show how they're learning and how they want to do it better, and to explain what happened. And yes, they're not happy, but they also, some of this was by design. And the root cause was, number one, they don't want to lose customer data. And so he goes into some detail about, number one, well, why did VSTS just fail over to another region?
Right. And there's some, he's got a really pretty good explanation of exactly why there, because he does talk about the fact that, you know, they've thought about their data protection strategy and how, you know, they store data in two regions using both the Azure SQL DB point in time restore as well as geo redundant storage. So they took, you know, measures, the measures that are available in Azure to try to, you know, protect the data, right? If I'm assuming I'm right there.
Yes, they do want to protect the data. That was, you know, that's number one thing. So, you know, data loss is not an option. So the thing was, okay, well, you're down, then at what point do you then do some kind of failover? And unfortunately, there's some synergy between some of the backend services like Azure Storage that VSTS is built on and their ability to control this when the entire data center goes down. And fortunately, then they had some other issues related to things like it having a global impact. And part of that has to do with the way some of the services are built, like release management and how some of the identity stuff in VSTS works, even if your account is not in that region. And this is particularly interesting for the customers that are outside the US. For example, if you're in Europe, one of the reasons European customers pick Europe is for better latency, but there's also a big issue with people wanting to have their data in their region, right? For example, in the EU, and fall under the EU data protection guidelines, et cetera. And so that kind of made people wonder what was going on there and what was happening. And Microsoft has always been very transparent. There's another complete white paper on how they handle security and identity. And because of the way Azure Active Directory works and how the service is built on top of it, there is this bit of data that has to go through the service. Now, are there things they can do to make it better? Absolutely. But unfortunately, some of this wasn't taken into account of losing an entire data center for this extended period, which then started to have this cascading effect until they were to bring things back online.
And what I really like about the post that the team has put out is they explain kind of why they didn't fail over, because they had a couple of options. They could either wait for this thing to recover, or they could try to access data from a read-only secondary copy, but that could cause some other services to degrade and could potentially lead to the loss of data. So they chose, they, as you said, they did not want to lose data, so they waited it out. Now, there are some improvements in how you can handle some of these data center failovers and failures with something called availability zones, which is something that was introduced in March 2018. And the post goes into some detail on how those work and is something that it looks like they potentially are going to look at to try to make sure that hopefully this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, one of the, you know, the interesting things there is that they do have this option to fail over to a read-only copy. Well, you know, Buck makes the point, having read-only access to version control isn't very useful. You know, that's not going to do a very good job for you. And, you know, part of this also goes into, you know, when you are reliant upon a cloud provider, what are you willing to tolerate? I had a question from an attendee here at the show who was affected by the downtime. And it affected not only their ability to do dev work, but it affected their production applications. And one of the things he asked about, which I've talked to some customers in discussing high availability, is multi-cloud solutions, being able to have your solution available in multiple major cloud providers. So AWS and Amazon, AWS, which is Amazon, and Azure, for example, or mix and match your cloud to be. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about SQL Server specifically for their application. And in doing so, I said, well, you know, the question I have is, number one, can you architect it to properly handle this type of redundancy? Because that's more complicated application logic and architecture. But more importantly, as much as you complain about it and you want all the wonders, you know, it's this weird experience where we want all these things, but we want the cheapest price, right? And so I said, would management be willing to spend the money? And the money is twofold: paying for more availability and services, and paying for the time it takes to re-architect. And depending upon what you're building, sure, companies do it. But what we'll find is that people will complain and get upset about it, but at the end of the day, did it really cost you that much? I don't know. You know, different organizations will have to quantify that. I think in all honesty, most dev teams should have been able to do a lot of stuff in general that they're always too busy to do, even if they couldn't use VSTS directly. You can read, you can research things. And if you're using Git in particular, you can even do offline work and do local commits. But fundamentally, if this outage caused you this ultimate level of pain, I think you're not really valuing what you do on a day-to-day basis. Did I like it? No. Did it cost me time? Absolutely. Did I have plenty of other things to do? Sadly, yes.
Of course. And like you said, this isn't just this type of outage isn't just, you know, doesn't only happen to Azure. It's happened to AWS at least a couple of times that I'm aware of. It's happened to other systems. So it's part of the, in my opinion, it's also a little bit of the learning curve as we do get even more and more heavily invested in the cloud.
Well, and it's all about that complexity level, right? If we think about how complex applications are today, what they can do, you know, the idea of running your own data center in, you know, the early 90s was you had a couple servers and maybe you had a cool room. Companies have invested more. They've gotten more complicated. You know, some of the bigger companies have really rich data center setups. But even a lot of them, how many of them have the redundancy to have multiple physical data centers? I know a lot of people talk about it. They go, well, we could have probably done it better. Well, could you really? I don't know. The fact that Microsoft is willing to be transparent is great. We can learn from it. And what I really like, as you said in the blog post, we get to kind of that root cause, talk about the major issues, and then talk about some of the supplementary or secondary issues that occurred, like release management, like degraded performance related to sign-in service and things, some dashboard errors. And I think one that was really, you know, painful for the team.
Oh, eventually, I know what you're going to say. I know which one, because I was about to say it, but go ahead.
Well, the service status, right?
Yep. explain that just a little bit.
So Microsoft has different ways of letting you know how services are behaving. There's a main Azure service status page, and Azure DevOps, aka VSTS, has its own entry there. However, the team maintains their own to talk about, and it's kind of like in the form of a blog format that will tell you how the service is doing. If you go there, they'll give you details if they're having trouble. So occasionally they might have slow performing build servers, or, you know, it's software. They have issues, they have bugs, they fix them. Well, unfortunately, they couldn't get to the area to update the service status due to a dependency on Azure Storage in the South Central US region. And so people are going to a page that says, hey, everything's great. And people are going, no, it's not.
And because they could not get there to update it, hours into the thing, it's still everyone thinks it's great. Or there's pages saying it's great when people are saying it's not. So yes, that's also one of the areas that kind of came out that they're going to address in the future, obviously.
Yeah, and that's, you know, kind of funny because that's just one of those things that just adds insult to injury, right? That's just like, yeah, go ahead. I'm on the ground. I'm bleeding. Come over and step on my finger too, you know, even though I skinned my knees.
Well, let me ask you, Brian. And again, I would love your unbiased opinion on this, which is, did this at all make you go, well, maybe I don't want to keep storing all my code in VSTS? Or did it make you second guess any of the stuff you're doing in Azure?
Absolutely not. I think the number one thing it made me think of is, you know, sometimes you get so busy, you're not doing all the things you want to do to keep things tidy. It's like doing your own personal backups. So it really made me think about, how am I doing to protect my own data and making sure I have what I need? Most of my day-to-day work when it comes to source code, I'm using Git. I'm using Azure Git repos. And so I have local copies. And so a good example is, I'm doing a PowerShell talk later this week. Well, all the PowerShell scripts I use, I keep using on a regular basis. They're in a repo. I could have worked on them. Like I said, I had other things to do. And so, you know, make sure that you have this contingency to be able to be busy was one of the things that came out of it for me. In particular, it's like when you plan, for example, to be on a flight, one of the things that's happening a lot now is I have Wi-Fi. And so sometimes I'll think, well, you know, I want to go do this with my kids, so I'll work on the plane. And I realize the thing I need to work on, I need internet access, but the internet's not on the plane. So it's really just doing a little more planning on my part. But the reality is, I know what it was like. I still have it. I just don't run it 24/7 like I used to. But I used to run a 24/7 TFS server for my team. People would connect from, you know, I worked with consultants all over the world. We'd connect in through VPN to my server, which meant I had to maintain it. I had to take care of it. I don't want to do that again. Are you kidding? So no, it hasn't changed my view at all. And I'd say for most customers, you know, it shouldn't be that big a deal, particularly knowing that you didn't lose data. You maybe lost a little time. And yes, no one wants to lose time. But at the end of the day, Microsoft, I think, did the best job, and they'll continue to improve and make it better. And the same thing with Azure, because once again, as we mentioned, nobody's perfect out there. And I think that's a big thing we try and push with DevOps over and over with this, you know, this constant self-improvement. You know, think Kaizen, think continuous improvement, and focus on the fact that you're going to screw up as humans. Humans make mistakes, but learn from the mistakes and improve and try and reduce the chances of it happening again.
Well said, well said. Well, I want to pivot our discussion, but before I do that, I do want to point out to everyone that we are a new podcast. This is episode 2, but we are always open to anyone who might want to sponsor us or help us out with the show, let us buy some pizza to eat while we're talking, or maybe a fresh beverage. So if you're potentially interested in that, feel free to reach out to us. We'll provide you contact information at the end of the show. And you're more than welcome to reach out to us, and we'd be happy to talk to you about that.
Boy, you're really getting that cart going ahead of the horse on episode 2, huh?
Why not? I think we've got something good here. But one of the things this outage did for me, though, is made me go, what is my home backup strategy? Because we had an issue a couple of years ago where we washed one of our iPhones. And then realized that iPhone was not backing up to iCloud and had not been synced to a computer in 6 months. So you know, luckily we were able to get it booted enough to be able to get information off of it. But that, you know, made us at least go with our iPhones. We've now set up all our iPhones where they automatically back up to iCloud. But that got me, also got me thinking, though, we have, you know, multiple PCs, laptops at my house, server at my house. And I don't think I necessarily have a really strong backup strategy for my environment. What about you?
Well, as the resident IT pro at my house, I have to think about, yes, number one, all of our iOS devices. So I have teenage children, and my daughter, to quote her, when I said, well, how about I just get you a flip phone? Her response was, you know, Daddy, I'll just keep my iPod. So number one, I have a 2 terabyte iCloud plan. It's not the cheapest way. Let me rephrase that. It's not the cheapest option out there, but it's the easiest, and it works with everybody's phones, so I don't have to worry about it, and it's just done. It's worth the peace of mind.
Exactly. That's what then, I did with our iPhones. It was just easy.
Then the next step was, for a lot of my primary data, I use Dropbox as well as OneDrive. So I have a little redundancy there. And then for some of the more critical things, I've been using Backblaze's PC backup software that backs up to the cloud. And then, as you may know, Mickey, I have a few hard drives.
Yes, you do. For those of you who ever see, whenever you see Brian at a conference, just feel free to ask him if you can see his personal portable data center.
Well, I haven't got an actual calculation. I've been working on a little tool to help me catalog some of my drives, because at this point I've got drives that have data I don't care about anymore. But one of the things I've done for the years, and you may have heard me on other shows or seen me speak about it, is I'm a real big fan of virtualization. And the amount of effort I put into virtual machines for customer work, as well as I built VMs for Microsoft for years, and they distributed them to the world for VSTS. And when it was Team System, as opposed to Team Services. But the long story short is, I'm in the multiple terabytes. I've easily got probably got close to a petabyte. I definitely got at least 250 to 500 terabytes of local disks in my house from portable drives and everything else, because I tend to buy them in sets and make redundant copies. And these days you can go get, like the current one I have with me on the road is an 8 terabyte Western Digital full-size drive that I use for backups on the road. So I'm pretty good. I'm not as good as I want. And the main thing is, I'm not as organized as I want to be. But so yeah, it's a combination of local backups and cloud backup. However, the problem with the local backups is, if my house sadly were to go down in flames, that would cause some pain and suffering. So the idea of what to do with the offsite ones, I think I should start shipping you some hard drives, Mickey. You want to be my offsite backup?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. My biggest issue is, I use, for the computers that I use daily, I use, you know, OneDrive, Dropbox, and I try to put almost everything there. So in theory, it's backed up to the cloud somewhere. But with the other computers used by the other people in my household, I've tried to get them to use OneDrive and things like that, but they still save stuff to their desktop or to their local documents folder. So I've decided I've got to come up with a better strategy for getting them to start to back stuff up to the cloud. And I possibly even need to put something in my house to where maybe I can do backups to a central location, and then potentially even, you know, put those on a portable drive and move those off site. Scott Hanselman usually has a blog post he puts out every couple of years about what his current backup strategy is. And he uses this whole, you know, he uses cloud backups, but he also backs up to like a NAS and then also moves those off site every once in a while. And I used to think, wow, that's a lot of effort. I don't need to go through that. That's not going to happen to me. And then we washed an iPhone. So I want to come up with a better strategy, but that also goes on the list of, as I'm sure you have, Brian, the 8 million other things that we also need to try to accomplish. But then I also started thinking, I need to do this for my mom and probably my sister, since I'm their IT support as well.
Yeah, families can be a real pain in the butt, can't they?
You can't choose them, but that's okay.
Especially, well, regardless. Well, what I was going to say is, regardless, yeah, you really need to have a good backup strategy. You're right. Hanselman is done that for years, and that's a good strategy. The key is start with your most important files, get those going. And the thing that's kind of sad is that, you know, people should be able to use OneDrive transparently. I got my kids and my wife to do it because their default save location is to their OneDrive. So it kind of happens automatically.
Yeah, I've got to figure out something, because some of these computers have been in use for years and years before I really even started using OneDrive that heavily. So I think I have to figure out some solution there. But that's definitely top of my mind, to come up with something that will work.
Yeah, and you know, I think the thing to keep in mind here, you know, you talked about, would I stop using VSTS? And it's like, absolutely not, because at the end of the day, I lost some time, but they took care of all my data. They were responsible. They had the geo-redundancy. And for me to do that myself, even if I wanted to, because I'm, you know, got some OCD issues at time, I just don't want to. I'm much happier to let them do it for me.
No, Brian. You know.
Now.
Oh, man. So what else you want to talk about, Brian?
Well, I think the interesting thing is, you know, we had this big announcement. Now we talked about the outage. So I think moving forward, then we'll start talking about some of the things that we're doing on a week by week basis to help customers and bring some of the real world stuff we run into. So next week, I will be in New York doing some Azure training and showing some good people in New York how wonderful Azure can be for them. What are you going to be doing?
Sweet. I will be back in San Diego for week two of a DevOps Fast Track, part of one of the things that the DevOps Customer Advisory Team does. We're helping a customer move a multi-terabyte database, TFS database, up into VSTS, and trying to help them explore what their options are. Because, you know, as you know, when you move from on-prem into Azure DevOps, some of the things you lose are like the SQL Server reporting services. So your reporting becomes a little bit different. So we're going to try to guide them on that a little bit, and try to guide them on just, you know, some best practices around how to start doing some of the things they want to do, getting their builds up and going. So I'll be in San Diego doing some of that next week.
And then the week after that, I'll be in Amsterdam for Techorama in the Netherlands, hanging out with a bunch of other DevOps-oriented geeks like Donovan Brown, Marcel DeVries.
I will not be in the Netherlands. But that's okay, because I'll be in Tupelo, Mississippi, which is even more world famous than the Netherlands.
Yeah, you got to quit saying things like "you suck" underneath when I'm talking, because I can see the waveform and that screws all the editing up.
Oh, you don't mind.
But just think, the week after that, so the week of October 7th? Yes, the week of October 7th. You and I will both be together in San Diego for Visual Studio Live. And in doing so, we're going to be doing a hands-on Azure DevOps workshop with ASP.NET Core or ASP.NET Regular or both. And it's going to be a hands-on experience. And then we're going to be doing talks on DevOps. And so if you're in the San Diego area, or you'd like to come experience this wonderful weather that Mickey's talking about, take a look at the show notes, and I'll include a discount code that you can use for registration, save you a little money. Otherwise, we'll have a nice trip report. So, and I think maybe we'll even record a show there live together. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea. And I would love, absolutely love it, if you came up to us during the workshop and said, "Hey, I actually caught your podcast, DevOps.fm, and give us your opinion." That would just make my day if somebody came up and said, "Hey, we've actually been listening to your podcast."
Well, don't hold your breath on that. We are young in the podcast world.
It will happen. Well, Brian, I have a question for you. So this is going to start to be one of my favorite aspects of the show here, which is, what can't we let go of this week? So I'm just curious if you have anything technical, non-technical, or whatever that you just can't let go of this week.
That is a good question. So what I would say that I can't let go of this week was, I got my son reading One of the book series I started reading as a child, I was a teenager, but it is the first set of books, the first three in the Dragonlance saga.
Yes! Dragons of Autumn Twilight, good man.
Yeah, so, well, we read that as over the summer. Let's just say we started it on vacation at the end of July. So I got through the whole book, and so I just thought I'd read ahead to make sure, because unfortunately my son, he doesn't like reading as much as he likes playing Fortnite. And so I have to make sure I keep him honest, and I'd make him occasionally write up what the chapter was about. So we finished The Dragons of Autumn Twilight, and right now I am I just got myself a new copy of Dragons of Winter's, is it Winter's or Winter Night? I'll fix in the show notes. But the point is, I got book number two, which it's been a while since I've read it. So I'm going to read that, and then I'll move on to the final one, which is Dragons of Spring Dawning. And we'll see if we can get him to read all those before the end of the calendar year, because he's back in school, he's playing water polo, and he's quite busy. So right now, I can't let go of Dragonlance. What about you, Mickey?
I loved Dragonlance, but I wore out my copy of Dragons of Autumn Twilight, and I actually collected all of the books in all of the trilogy series that they released in the 80s and 90s.
Wait. You have all the books?
I do, in boxes in the basement.
You and I have serious problems, brother, because I do too.
I loved the Time of the Twins trilogy was one of the ones I really liked the most, where we kind of got the backstory on Raceland a little bit, and that was one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Now, there's some newer ones that came out fairly recently that I have not read, so we'll may have to put some links to folks that aren't up on Dragonlance. But the interesting thing is I have the original paperbacks, and my Dragons of Autumn Twilight is kind of torn to ripped. So I bought a new copy for us to take with us on vacation. When I needed to get the winter one, I thought, you know, I'm not going to try and dig that one up. And I didn't want to do a digital copy because I really like to be able to turn off the screens at night and just look at paper, and I find it much more relaxing. So I'm sticking to the paper ones. I'm not going to rebuy all the books, of course, because that would just be wild and crazy. But definitely for these first three, and then probably for the Time of the Twins, if I can keep them interested, I'll be doing extra copies. But I even have the hardbound copies and the annotated editions of both series. So, yeah, I'm a big geek boy there. So what about you, though? What can't you let go of?
Well, you know what? I'm going to go in the same vein as you, but with a different series of books, because I got my youngest daughter, who's 14, to start reading a book called The Passage by, I think his name is Joseph Cronin. And it's a series of books that came out around between 2012 and 2016. It's a trilogy, and it's basically a post-apocalyptic, a virus starts turning people into vampires kind of thing. But the writing is, if you've ever read It by Stephen King, that is one of the books that I cannot put down. It is just a page-turner, page-turner. And this guy writes the exact same way. It is just, it's always one of those, okay, just one more chapter. Okay, just one more chapter. And he tells things from, you know, current day and then jumps to future day and back and forth. And the way he does it is just really amazing. So I introduced Meg to the first book there this summer, and she just ate it up. So now she's on the second one. And we just found out they're turning the first book into a television series that's going to come out early next year, with the lead actor is the guy that played Zach from Saved by the Bell.
For those of you kidding. Who
are old school like me. And he has really grown up as an actor. He's really pretty impressive now. So it's been kind of neat, in the same way that you're kind of sharing that with your son, for me to kind of share reading these books at the same time with my daughter, and just being able to discuss them with her. And so that's kind of cool.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, should we call this one a wrap?
Let's call it a wrap, Brian. Where do we find you if we want to find you?
Easiest way is on Twitter, at Brian Randall, or you can get my contact info via the show notes, which you can always find via devops.fm.
Awesome. And you can find me at MickeyGousset.com or at Mickey_Gousset, or even shoot me an email, Mickey.Gousset@Microsoft.com. We'll put that'll be available in the show notes as well. Now, Brian, does our podcast have any kind of social presence?
Well, we do. We have the Twitter handle at DevOpsFM.
And we also have an email. You can email us at theshow@devops.fm. So if you have questions about DevOps, you have something you want to ask us about, you have questions not about DevOps, you want to talk about Dragonlance or any other good fantasy or science fiction series, shoot us an email and we'll be happy to talk to you about it.
Careful now. We become famous, we might have way too much email, but that'd be a good problem.
I would like to have that problem.
All right. Well, on that bombshell, I say we say good night, folks. Be good humans.
Good night, everybody. Hey, Brian, guess what it's time for now?
The after show.
The after party. Woohoo! We made it through 2 episodes.
Well, we're doing pretty good. Hey, you need to check your website. When you go look at it, I just get a couple ads and I think your face. So you need to.
That's intentional. That's my splash page.
Yeah, but what's
MickeyGousset.com?
Yeah, but what are the ads for senior living or something that are on there?
I have no idea. That's just the Google ads that got thrown up there right now. Because interesting enough, that's what you've been searching for. Because what I see is Visual Studio San Diego, California ads.
Well, that's kind of funny because it wasn't me. It was our good friend Robert Green, who was in my hotel room earlier tonight before I did the podcast with you and got things set up. And so I told him to go search for our podcast to see if he could find it. And he did. And then he was looking at the show notes. And so he decided to go to MickeyGousset.com. He started complaining about the way it looked on his phone. So you might want to take a look at that or just ignore Robert Green.
Or just ignore Robert Green. So if you look at my homepage, what I've got is a splash page, a homepage where basically it's just an introduction. And then you can go to my About Me or my blog or my speaking, that kind of thing. And of course, I threw a little Google ads up there just because, you know, maybe one day I'll make an actual enough money to buy a cup of coffee. But yeah, I may consider taking them off the front page then just because, you know, I wouldn't want Robert to alienate me because of the ads on my website.
Well, now it looks fine when you go in the browser, but I also have Ghostery, which turns off the ads. So I'm not seeing the ads. But the other problem is,
Brian, that's not helping me.
Yeah, exactly. I know. The problem is, you've got something wonky here. When you go to www, it kind of did some stuff. So we might have to look at your DNS settings at some point.
Well, I probably need to, I don't like the current theme I'm using either. So I need to probably figure that out. I've been doing some editing on the page on the site today, so I may have screwed something up, but I need to find me a good theme. Oh, so that's another thing, dear listeners. If you're still listening to this, bless you. But second off, if you've got a good suggestion for a WordPress theme that I should use for my site, then, you know, send me an email at theshow@devops.fm and let me know what you think I should use and I'll look into it because I'm definitely wanting to revamp my site.
Well, yours is just hosted on WordPress then. Is that what's going on?
Yes. It's just, you know, I've got my own hosting, but it's just a WordPress blog. Is all it is. Okay. So I can go in and modify anything on it I want to, though I found that ultimately modifying WordPress can be very frustrating too. That's why I want to find a theme that just I can drop in and it works.
Okay. Well, at this point, it's getting late. It's time for Daddy's bedtime. So I think the after show is going to end a little early tonight. But hey, it was good to talk to you, Mickey. And, we'll get this episode edited and up so people can actually listen to it, and then we'll work on episode 3 for next week.
Awesome. Well, you stay safe, brother.
All right. Have a good night, buddy. Take care.